Human Services to order.
Do a reminder about that schedule for February 9th.
I've got some announcements to make here to at least the committee members that are here. We've been instructed by the President of the Senate that he is instituting a series of scheduled days for the legislators to be in district. And he has taken five different Fridays to do that, and there will be no session on those Fridays. In the past three sessions, we have had one day off on a Friday during the spring vacation time, and one of those 5 days will be that particular day, which is March 23rd. The other 3 days that we're concerned with basically for our committee are February 9th, which will be a week from today, and March 2, then April 13th, and he's also scheduled one on May 28th to coincide with the Friday off before Memorial Day. Now, basically, our committees are scheduled to be shut down by that time, so that really doesn't affect our committee meetings, at least as they're scheduled and as our potential, maybe not potential schedule, but as our hoped-for schedule will take place. And so I wanted to alert folks that I was not going to call my committee. It wouldn't be much of an in-district day if I kept everybody here till 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon, so especially when I have some folks like my colleague here from Coos Bay who has 3.5 hours home. That wouldn't even get him home in time to get to his hardware store to run an errand, let alone be in the district for the day. So out of deference to the President of the Senate, I wanted to make that announcement. Fortunately, we had not gotten our schedule posted yet for the 9th. We had been working on it, and we're going to extend that on over to the 12th, I believe. And we will have no committee, no Health and Human Services Committee on February 9th, March 2, or April 13th, unless further notice and some other change takes place. I apologize, I just got that note in my office this morning, so I would have told you sooner had I had availability to it. And I'm eagerly awaiting Senator Messerly's announcement because he has a committee in the morning.
Oh, my.
He has not given me the benefit of his decision yet. So. Okay, let's see. We want to go into public hearing on Senate Bill 331. And I'll have staff here give us a rundown on the bill.
Thank you, Senator Fisher. Senate Bill 331 is somewhat similar to a bill we heard earlier on loan repayment to encourage health practitioners to work in critical shortage areas. What this bill does is it creates the nursing service program. It allows the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which is the entity that kind of administers student financial aid in Oregon, to pay a portion of a student loan for nurses who practice in critical shortage areas of nursing. It also allows nurses who practice part-time to be eligible for loan forgiveness programs, which is a little bit different than the repayment program. It also creates the Nursing Services Fund and repeals the Nursing Education Loan Program effective July 1, 2012. As a little background, this is, again, similar to the Rural Health Services Program we discussed at an earlier meeting, in that it will allow nurses who agree to work for a certain amount of time in critical shortage areas to get partial repayment of their qualifying loans if they agree to certain conditions of practice. The commission notes that right now nurses, the primary program is a loan program where nurses can get forgiveness of loans if they agree to practice for a certain amount of time in the critical shortage areas, but just a small percentage of maybe 50% of nurses are actually doing it. The other portion are actually just repaying loans. They're not getting nurses in these shortage areas. Under the nursing service program, nurses who even been in practice for a while, still have outstanding loans, could be eligible for a repayment program up to $100,000 over a four-year period. And the program would also set up a student assistant or the nursing service fund, where it would be kind of the holding restricted fund for this repayment monies. And this particular bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. We have here Jim Beyer and Brian DeLashment. Jim, you represent the Oregon Students Action Committee, and the Brian represents the Oregon Nurses Association. Go ahead as you wish, gentlemen.
Okay. I'll begin. For the record, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Beyer, Oregon Student Assistance Commission. This bill pertains to the Oregon Nursing Loan Program. And just for a little bit of background about the program, it was established in 1993. We have made loans to 227 individuals, including this academic year. As the committee administrator described, it's a loan forgiveness program for students seeking their first RN or BSN degree. If, after receiving the loan, they practice in an area that's designated as a critical shortage area, then the loans, principal and interest, are forgiven on a year-for-year basis. And the designated shortage areas are defined by the Board of Nursing in consultation with the Office of Rural Health. What we're proposing in this bill are two items. One item addresses what we perceive to be a shortcoming in the forgiveness provisions in the existing program, and the second is proposing to redirect the program in a different fashion to mirror our loan repayment program. And we would do that by creating a new program that we would call Nursing Services Program. Very briefly, on the first item, what we perceive to be a shortcoming in the forgiveness provisions. Right now, in order for a loan to be forgiven, a nurse by statute must practice full time in a shortage area. There are no exceptions. Our experience over these last 7 years have indicated that, first of all, many rural areas cannot afford full-time staff, but they still need qualified nurses, so half-time employment is quite common. Many of the recipients of these nursing loans either already resided in a critical shortage area or live adjacent to one at the time that they entered into a nursing program, and they did so with the understanding and the intention that they would be able to practice, stay in the communities they know, and have the loan forgiven, only to find that if they couldn't secure full-time employment, we were not able to apply those forgiveness provisions. The amendments to Senate Bill 331 allow us to prorate loans in the event that a nurse is working less than full-time but at least half-time. There are other programs that have existed in the past. We have administered a federal program in the teaching arena, for example, where prorated forgiveness was one of the provisions. And while we're not anticipating any new loans under this program because of the other series of amendments we're proposing, the servicing of these loans will go on for a number of years, and we would like to have this this prorated forgiveness in place. The major part of this bill is creating a new program called the Nursing Services Program. It's a mirror of the Rural Health Loan Repayment Program, and last week you had a bill that was heard here that, and I think you heard about the effectiveness of that program. We've been administering the nursing loan program for 7 years now, and over the course of this time, we have been working cooperatively with the Oregon Nurses Association and the Office of Rural Health to monitor the performance of the program. And our recommendation after this time is that it's time to examine converting this to a more effective program. I've provided some brief statistics for you and more elaborate on the second page if you want to review the full extent of the data that we have. But very briefly, of the 154 graduates who have already graduated, have passed out of the grace period, they're not in any kind of deferment status, 50% of them have had their loans forgiven. However, that is a misleading statistic because in the very first year of the program that loans were made, 1993, we discovered that the original statutes had a major oops in them, and that was that the words critical shortage area were left out of the statutes, which meant that the first recipients of those loans could work as a nurse in Oregon and have the loan forgiven. Well, something like 90% of that first class did have their loans forgiven, but they could work in Medford, Eugene, Portland. That was subsequently fixed in the next session, so it only pertained to that that opening class. So if you delete those individuals, the statistics are don't tell a very good story. It really boils down to roughly, to date, for every 10 individuals that we have awarded a forgivable loan to, we only have approximately 3 that are out in practice in a designated shortage area, and we have 50% of the nurses in repayment. In our estimation, this performance is not meeting the goal of providing critical nursing services to Oregon's shortage areas. Our experience with the loan repayment program, however, is quite different, and this is why we think this is a much more effective way to deliver services. While the current program that we administer is limited to 227 nursing students who have borrowed through it, when you institute a loan repayment program, in essence, you are opening the doors to any licensed nurse in the United States who enters into a contract with us and agrees to practice in one of our shortage areas. So you're expanding your eligible population. Secondly, by the nature of what we're doing right now, we are awarding participants who are new nurses, and their skill levels may not match what rural programs need. Again, when you have the entire pool of nurses in the United States at your disposal, you have the possibility of having nurses with a wide variety of and range of experience. Another reason for moving in this direction is the state gets an immediate return on its investment. You only pay funds to a nurse at the time they do the right thing, as opposed to front-loading money to a nursing student who may or may not even complete the nursing program. Dollars are only expended when nurses are in a shortage area, so rather than looking at a ratio of 3 to 10, we're talking about 10 to 10. And we have an equal amount of time administering the loan repayment program. We have found this to be a very effective tool for delivering health practitioners to shortage areas in Oregon, and much more efficient as administratively. Finally, just to give you an idea of how the loan repayment program works, the designated areas would still be determined by the Board of Nursing in consultation with the Office of Rural Health. Nurses that have federal loan debt who would be interested in working in a shortage area would apply to us. Our experience in our current program is we always have far more many applicants than we can ever fund, so there's a selection process that occurs. An individual who was selected has up to 2 years to find qualifying work in a shortage area. Once they have completed their first year, we begin paying off 25% of their qualifying federal loan debt. So over the course of 4 years, we would pay off all of the loan principal for the qualifying debt that they had in their professional program. They have to serve a minimum of 2 years. If they do not meet that minimum 2 years, and we've already delivered some funds to them, then they would be obligated to repay all of the money we have delivered to them, plus a 50% penalty. I might point out that in the current loan program that we're existing, the repayment program, we haven't had to institute the penalty clause yet, and we've had our first payments back in 1994.
Senator Shields.
I get accused of falling asleep in the afternoon, so I don't think I did it yet. However, you said something about paying paying 25% per year for 4 years, but you only have to do the work 2 years. How's that?
That's a minimum service obligation. So they have to...
But if they only work 2 years...
We've only paid off half of that original federal loan principal, and they don't get the rest of the benefit.
Okay. Yeah. That's, I just wanted that clarification.
Right. Senator Masrally?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really concerned about the definition of nursing critical shortage area. And let me tell you why I want to really carefully identify that. In 1997, the body passed funding for rural health grants. And when I got to looking into those grants, a major portion of it went to a clinic in Eugene and to the Oregon Health Science Center. And at least it was my intention when I voted on the bill, this again in 1997, that those funds were going to be going to rural communities, rural clinics, and those where the real need was. So I want to make very clear and be sure in my own mind that what we're talking about is well-defined shortage areas, and that we all know exactly what we mean by that.
If I may, Brian DeLeishman, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. I have some comments, but maybe I can start by addressing Senator Messerly's comment. The focus of the existing loan program has always been on the rural areas. The definition that's stated here is, I believe, the same as it has been in the past. However, let me give you one caveat. There are, because of the nursing shortage in the state of Oregon right now, there are critical shortages of nurses by practice that may not just occur in a rural area. For example, ICU, CCU, critical care nurses, nurse educators, that if, in fact, in consultation, the Board of Nursing, the Office of Rural Health come to the conclusion that there is a critical shortage of ICU nurses in Medford or Eugene, they could, in fact, allot some of these dollars for that particular piece. So the broader definition is to include not only by geographics, but by the potential of having nursing shortages based on practice types.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
Certainly.
And that brings, actually begs another question, that there are several reasons for shortages then. And it might be the availability, it might be families moving away or retiring, or the pay scale in certain communities or hospitals. And so it makes me even wonder more exactly how we define this, and are we really going to fill the need that we're trying to talk about here?
If I may actually start through the points that I was...
Start
through some of the points that I was going to make, and I think some of them will address Senator Messerly's
Okay, I had one more further question that along these lines, and it was Mr. Byers' testimony. Did I understand you right to say that they have to make that decision within 2 years of getting out of school? There was, in order to get into this program...
Mr. Chair, they have to, when we award somebody, we say, now we're going to reserve dollars for you, provided you do the right thing. From that moment that they sign a contract with us, they have 2 years to find suitable employment.
Okay.
We use this as a
That explains because when Brian is saying they would need some experienced person like a teaching nurse or something like that, I'm not seeing how you would get teaching nurse out of their 2 years out of school. So I understand now what you're saying is 2 years from the time they apply for the program.
Yes.
Senator Fisher, members of the committee, as I just stated, I'm Brian DeLeishman, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. It's my pleasure being here today and sitting next to Jim. Karen Whitaker from the Office of Rural Health had hoped to be here today. She has lost her voice, so obviously it wouldn't do her a lot of good to come here and testify. But I just wanted to mention that the Office of Rural Health, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, I still want to call them the State Scholarship Commission, and the Oregon Nurses Association has been looking at the existing program that we've had in place that Jim described, which was the loan program up front, and then the history of repayments. And all three of us have come to the conclusion that what the original program established in 1993 was attempting to do was not as successful as we had hoped. At the same time, if you look at the parallel program that you're well aware of, dealing with nurse practitioners, PAs, and doctors, as far as the repayment of loans, That program is exceedingly successful, and it wasn't the reality of one program by practice the type of provider was going to be more successful. It was the way these two programs were designed differently up front. One of them was, in fact, a loan repayment after we got them out there. The other was the scholarships up front. So we are, you know, when I read the summary of this bill, it says creates. I can see a lot of people in the back of the room saying, oh, they're creating something new and they're going to ask for some more dollars. In reality, it's not creating. It is taking a program that we have now and redesigning it to be much more effective than it had been in the past, and using the exact same allocation of dollars that is already in the budget. I wasn't aware that this had subsequently rolled away as a means, but that money is already set aside in ways and means in both the governor's budget and, my understanding, the co-chair's budget. So we are not going to have to go out and look for some additional resources. This is a program that's there, been there since 93. We're just shifting gears and saying we're going to make it much better.
Well, we can't ask for a dispensation to take away the recommendation.
And I would hope that you do that, Mr. Chair. That's the point. That's the reason why I wanted to bring up the point that the dollars, this is an existing program, the dollars were allocated and are continuing to be allocated.
Well, you know, it's interesting what you mentioned, because when you prime somebody up front, it probably isn't too hard to convince your spouse that they ought to go to rural Oregon if they can get money while they're going through school. But it might be very difficult once they get out of school to convince them to actually follow that up, because in going out to the rural areas, we found out that basically most of the rural areas could basically care less about the professional. They go out and see whether the spouse is willing to move out into the sticks or not, you know. And you might actually have hit upon something here that might not seem so difficult at the time if you were getting it in a time when finances were tight, but then it might be a whole lot more hard to fulfill that on the aftermath of it, rather than the other way around, if they sign up for it and know they really have to go out there and perform.
Point well made, Mr. Chair.
Senator Shields.
Do you think if you make these adjustments, you can get more mileage out of your money?
Exactly. There are, as Jim had indicated, a couple of changes in here. We consider them to be technical changes, but as Jim said, you'll get 10 for 10. Yeah. Because, in fact, they will already be there. Rather than, if they don't go there, then they're repaying the loan back. And one of the concerns we have is this allocation of dollars in the past has gone to the state scholarship, the Student Assistance Commission, to allocate the dollars. But when the repayment's made, it doesn't go back to this fund. It goes to the general fund. So it's lost to the program if they don't follow through. So the dollars that are being allocated ultimately aren't doing the job. If we redesign the program the way we're asking for it to be redesigned, if they in fact default you don't lose those dollars. Those dollars stay internal. It maximizes the dollars that you've allocated for this particular purpose, which is a very noble purpose, obviously, to get nurses in critical shortage areas in the state. And we saw this coming in 93. In reality, the nursing shortage in 93 was rural, or potentially rural only. In some cases, you can say it's maldistribution, whether it's nurses, doctors, or whatever. You have a lot of in one area, but you didn't have any in rural areas. We have not seen a glut of nurses during any of this decade. But we had a larger shortage of nurses in the rural areas, and that's why we started up this program the way we did. We're now, of course, as I was pointing out to Senator Messerly, we're finding shortages by some practice types in other areas of the state. So there's a little flexibility in this to deal with that. But we still think, even with that change, by maximizing the dollars internally and not letting them escape this program and having it done on the tail end as a repayment, you're going to get a lot bigger bag for your buck, and you're going to get a lot more of these people into the program. The other two technical changes that I want to mention, and I want to emphasize, that as the three entities got together and said, okay, what are the other problems we're having, and Jim mentioned, was part-time versus the full-time. It may be a matter in a particular community where there isn't full-time work, and this person's willing to go out there, and the only work, the community is so small, the only work that's needed is a part-time person. But if they don't get the part-time person because of the program, they get no one, because that person decides not to locate there. So that was a change that we thought was very logical. Obviously, they're not getting 100% repayment. They're getting half the repayment for half the work. But it still assists them and assists us in getting folks out there. So with that, I think I'll probably end my comments. We are strong supporters of this change. And again, as I indicated earlier, it reflects the success that the nurse practitioner PA and MD program, that this is exactly modeled on the success we've had in those programs. And I'll answer any questions if you have.
You talked about shortages by practice type. How much of that would be, well, let me redo the question. I can understand shortages in rural areas, but it's harder to understand shortages by practice type if you've got a vibrant economy and in a urban area and so on. So my question is, how much are those shortages because of geographic considerations? How many of them are because of management, or what other kinds of what creates the shortages, I guess is what I'm saying.
If I may, Chair Fisher, Senator Shields, there's a number of factors, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that was an additional point that I wanted to follow up on Senator Messerly's question. We are going through what we consider a severe nursing shortage statewide, nationally, and nationwide right now. What are the factors that lead us to that nursing shortage? There are many. And there is a nursing shortage summit that's going to occur in this state on March 2nd that we'll participate in, along with all the other stakeholders, the employers, the state of Oregon, the governor, some legislators, and so forth, that we're going to explore, at least in the state of Oregon, what we think the extent of the shortage is and what the major contributing factors are. So in relationship to your question, we may have a shortage in a particular practice area. And one example I'll give you is, for example, nurse educators. One of the problems we're having that helps create the shortage, at least from the perspective of the Oregon Nurses Association, is that we don't have enough nurse educators in the state to educate the nurses we need to be staffing the needs of the state. So that, in fact, could be a critical shortage that could be designated under this bill. But in the design of this bill, its consultation, obviously the emphasis is on the Office of Rural Health in consultation with the Board of Nursing and the Commission to make those determinations. So, but another example would be a critical care nurse. It may be the stress level that may people shy away from that particular type of nursing. It may be a surgical nurse. Maybe it's geographic, maybe it's not. We see shortages in those types of settings regardless of geographics, and in a lot of cases regardless of which facility we're talking about. So it may or may not be working conditions, but it may in fact be the type of nursing because of the stress level, the high intensity, the high workload, whatever, that are causing some of these shortages.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Messerly.
I don't mean to be a stickler on this, but I really do feel that we need a better definition of what is a shortage. And I can see where you could have seasonal shortages or maybe, you know, how much, what is the time frame we're looking before you can define it as a shortage? And it, because I would think you would want to address it in different ways, particularly when you're managing this on loans that are going to go over a longer period of time. But you know, I support the incentive you're trying to create here. I just think we need to spend more time in defining what we're doing and how we're going to do it.
Senator Fisher, Senator Messerly, I would hope that you would allow the further definition of critical access as far as definition, as far as timelines and things like that, to be done through the administrative rules process rather than essentially having to spell it out in statute, because as we know, the needs and change, and then you have to come back and change the statute each time you want to address a particular thing that you hadn't thought about before. So we have absolutely no problem with with looking at that in the rules process, and I assume the Office of Rural Health and the Student Assistance Commission would be very interested in doing that, too. Your concern is duly noted.
Sure, follow. And this is not a new definition, so I assume you've got administrative rules that help you now, and I guess I'd like to hear some of those.
Mr. Jarrett, and me, Senator Meserly, we do have administrative rules. What might be helpful is I can read right from our current loan application, which defines for applicants. How do we define right now for these individuals what is a shortage area? It's an area where the ratio of nurses to population is greater than 1 to 258. It's a clinic located in a rural area which receives federal public health services grants. It's a Medicare-certified rural health clinic, or it's a rural hospital certified by the Office of Rural Health as Type A, Type B, or Type C rural hospital. So it's very well defined. And then furthermore, they have actually prepared, we have areas by zip code in terms of what constitutes current definition, and we provide this to anybody who is interested in participating in the program. So it's very tightly defined, and the law does allow us, actually says that they shall set this annually, so it's not something that you just set and walk away.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just a clarification with the Rural Health Services Program you presented last week. You differentiated the federal regulations for critical shortage versus the more stringent state definition. Is this the same hold here? Is there a federal definition of critical shortage that's a bit looser in terms of defining critical shortage for nursing?
I can't answer that definitively, but based on just anecdotal conversations, I think, again, our definitions tend to be more restrictive than federal definition. They certainly are, as you're pointed out in the other program.
Yeah. Additionally, Mr. Chair, the definition that Jim read as far as administrative rule is tied to type A, B, and C hospitals, which is somewhat of a unique thing that we've tied a lot of rural programs to in this state. We have nothing further. If you're done with questions, obviously, encourage you to revamp this program so it can give you a bigger bang for your buck and take care of some of the problems that we've seen over the last 7 or 8 years, and we'll move on.
Yes, Senator Carter.
Ryan, what would keep you from changing under your administrative rule? Is your program so tightly knit in terms of its practice in law that you could not change it through administrative rule because it's sounds like common sense stuff what you want to do?
Yeah, the current statute specifically spelled out that it was a loan up front. It was, the language was very specific. It did not allow any option for part-time. So we ran with that program for a while until it became very apparent to us that the program was not as successful as the parallel program, and that's why we're having to come back statutorily and get that changed.
Thank you very much. We will bring this back for work session in the near future. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 331. We've got the full committee here, so I'm going to go ahead and just briefly go over an announcement I made earlier. The Senate President has sent out a schedule of in-district days allowing for the members of the Senate to go back to district, and he is designated those as February 9, March 2, and March 23, which generally also is the day we take off for spring vacation, Friday. So I would not have been planning to schedule a committee meeting on that day anyway. April 13th and May 28th. May 28th is beyond the schedule of when our committee is scheduled to stop, so it doesn't really affect us. That's Friday prior to Memorial Day. But we will not have committee meeting on February 9th, March 2, or April 13th. And I wanted you to know that. Also, we have been invited as a committee to a luncheon for a discussion regarding community learning centers and their impact on Oregon.
Unfortunately, the Senate has a caucus during that period of time on Monday, February 12th from 12 to 1. So I don't know that at least the Republican members here would be able to attend at that time, but we did want to make that announcement also for the rest of the committee benefit. And perhaps the folks that are putting this on could discuss things with the leadership, and I'll ask you, Rick, to maybe alert them to the fact that that is scheduled for a Republican caucus on every Monday and Wednesday. It's 12 to 1. So if they want to try to reschedule that to catch us, we can give notice of that later on. Let's see, where are we at? Yeah. Okay, public hearing, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 371, and I'll ask staff to review that with us here.
Senate Bill 371 authorizes the Director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services, or DAS, to appoint the Director of Health Licensing, the Director of the Health Licensing Office. This eliminates the Senate confirmation of that position. As a little background, the Health Licensing Office was created in 1999 legislature to provide coordination administration functions to the boards, councils, and programs for a number of different health-related professions and occupations in Oregon. These include athletic trainers, body piercing, cosmetology, denture technology, direct entry midwifery, electrology, hearing aid dealers, permanent color technology, respiratory therapy, sanitarians, and tattoo artists. Currently, the Health Licensing Office provides regulatory enforcement, monitors compliance of these professions and occupations. They investigate complaints, provide mandatory and annual inspections, and conduct public meetings and do updates on these different areas.
Good. We have here Dan Kennedy from DAS to DAS. I don't know how to pronounce that. As long as it isn't Chas or Chad or something like that, maybe we're okay. Could you give us a correct pronunciation of DAS?
I will.
For the record.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dan Kennedy. I'm the administrator of the Human Resource Services Division of the Department of Administrative Services. We call it DAS. It's called many other things by many other people.
No kidding.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 371, as your committee administrator said, does change the appointment of the administrator of the Health Licensing Office from the governor to the director of DAS. The health-related licensing boards have sort of moved around in state government over the years. They have were in the original Commerce Department, and then moved to the Department of Human Services Health Division, and the 1999 legislature created the Health Licensing Office as a separate entity. And I think everyone would agree that it was just sort of an oversight that put in that bill was the appointment process that made that an appointment by the governor and subject to Senate confirmation. Prior to that, that office would not have been appointed by the governor, but by the administrator or director of the agency where they were located. What has made this moot over a period of years is the fact that we've had one person there for some period of time. So when that happened in 1999, to comply with the law, we went through a recruitment process. The governor appointed and the Senate confirmed the current administrator. And I think the governor's office realized at that time that was probably not appropriate for that level of activity to have Senate confirmation and the governor appoint. And so they asked us to bring this bill forward. This would streamline the process, and I think if there's a vacancy at some point in the future, we'll be able to handle it a lot more easily than was done the last time. So, sir.
And my understanding is then that that would not necessarily automatically have to come up every so often for reappointment or continued appointment.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't know that any of us senators wants to do any more work than we have to do in the way of appointments, do we?
I think not.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Messer.
I'm new to this game of Health and Human Services, and I'm not familiar with exactly what this office does and how many employees and how many licensing authorities they have and that type of thing.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Messerly, there are, by my count, 9 different boards that license health-related occupations, as Mr. Bracobian pointed out. And I'm going, if you allow me, I'd like to ask how many people are in the office? How many? Mr. Chairman, 27 positions in the office who do all the administrative oversight, all the licensing, all the testing, and all the management of that program.
Mr. Chair, if I'm understanding the request, normally when the Senate confirms, and I'm also new to the Senate, but you're dealing with departments that have hundreds or thousands of employees and deal with some pretty serious overriding regulatory authorities throughout the state. What I'm hearing you say is that in this case, it's first of all, not that much activity, but not that big a staff that it shouldn't. The confirmation shouldn't be at the same level?
Mr. Chairman, I'd say, Senator Messerly, that's correct. Although we do have a lot of different boards and commissions with very few people, and they do have Senate confirmation, what you've seen over the last several years, the legislature has moved some boards and commissions out from under exec control and made them quasi-independent or completely independent. And generally, it is a function of both the size of the organization and also the policy issues that rise to that organization. So I think what you'll see over a period of time is more and more of this trying to streamline the organizations.
Well, Senator Messerly, your statement isn't exactly necessarily true. We don't confirm necessarily all the department heads. For instance, we don't confirm SCF director, we don't confirm SDSD director, and those kind of things, even though they have manifold employees and large, but they are hired and interviewed and chosen by the head of the Department of Human Resources. And so this isn't putting something out there that would be different. It would be just merely a small function here would be put back under the direction of the, probably the Department of Human Resources, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, the Department of Administrative Services.
Oh, I see. So you handle the health licensing.
Yes, sir. Okay. We do the administrative.
It wouldn't be giving you anything different
no.
at all than what the Department of Health or the Department of Health and Human Resources position holds.
That's a good point, Mr. Chairman. That's correct. The Department of Human Services has a lot of different divisions within it, and you're correct. The director of that department does appoint those division administrators.
Questions? Thank you very much. I want to enter into record that the director, Susan K. Wilson, of the Health Licensing Office has sent a letter of support for the bill and indicates that the bill is consistent with the governor's intent to focus on reserving appointment of cabinet level, larger state department level managers for the governor, and transfers appointment of smaller agency director appointments to larger department directors. So, and she puts in a plea for our support in her last sentence. So, I'll put that on record.
Further comment? Hearing none, we will bring this back for a work session, and I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 371. And I don't believe we have any committee bills to introduce, so I'm going to close the session on Health and Human Services for today and wish you all a good weekend.
Thank you, Mrs. Chairman. Can go to work.
Yeah,
to go take
pictures.
Oh, you do.
Roger Beyer was ready to give you a hard time this morning,
oh, okay.
Wasn't he?
A whole bunch of pictures taken. So I promised I'd take them every night.